Talk on Real Estate. My name is Sherry Doherty, and I'm delighted today to have in studio with me a very special guest, local mortgage market industry expert, Karen Mathey. Welcome, Karen.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
I'm very excited today to have you. You are my first official guest, if you don't count my husband. So my husband was a stand-in, and it was just a little bit silly about the life of being married to a realtor and how things have changed since I had a 9-to-5 and now I have a 24/7.
Yeah.
So that was kind of fun, but I'm really happy to have you in-house today. So can you tell us exactly where you're from, what you do, and what your title is?
Absolutely. So my name is Karen Mathey, as Sherry said. I'm a mortgage agent level 2, and I'm co-owner of the Mortgage Professionals in Kingston. I had a career overseas before this and then came back, and I come from a family of brokers. Actually, my father and my brother are mortgage brokers.
Excellent. Okay. So for our listeners, can you describe to them the benefit of working with a mortgage broker and what it is different to than going to like your traditional big five bank for financing? Or something.
Absolutely. So, you know, we say that it's not that, you know, bank bad, broker good, or vice versa. There's a place in the market for both. And we actually, as brokers, deal with almost 30 lenders. And of those, three of the six big banks we work with. So it's not necessarily that we say that, you know, you should never go to a bank or that it's always better to go to a broker. It's that we offer choice, flexibility, and knowledge. And I think that's important because when you go to a bank, you either are dealing with somebody who has to be a jack of all trades. So sometimes you're dealing with somebody who has to know TFSAs and they have to know insurance and they have to know mortgages. And they're not necessarily an expert on any of those things. Some banks do have mortgage specialists, but again, they're dealing with a large volume of people. So they don't necessarily specialize per se. They're getting a lot of leads from the branch and they're dealing with those. In our case, we specialize in mortgages. And because we know so many different lenders, we have different products, we have different programs, we have more flexibility, in my opinion, a lot more flexibility in product. And sometimes we can save a client both on the interest rate, but also just on the terms of the mortgage. We can save a client thousands. And I'll give you a very quick example
Sure.
of this, which is we had a client come in who was buying a green home, new build green home.
Okay.
And when you buy a new build green home, there's a lot of rebates offered through the government in a lot of variety of ways. But one of those is on your mortgage. And so this client had gone to a bank, had been pre-approved by a bank, but they came to us, they were referred to us when they actually had a live offer in play. And I said, oh, did you know that you can get $5,000 back off your mortgage, essentially, for having this green home? You apply for a rebate after it closes. And they said, no, nobody ever brought that up to us. And they knew we were going to buy a green new home, essentially.
Sorry, just for the listeners, can you explain what a green home is?
Absolutely. So it's an energy efficient home. It has to meet certain criteria. It's a new build, and it's built in a particular way that ensures it's energy efficient. So the windows, the doors, there are tests that are run to ensure that it meets that criteria of energy efficiency.
Okay. Perfect. Okay.
So in that example, that's where us kind of knowing a lot more actually saved that client $5,000 they wouldn't have otherwise have saved.
That's amazing. One of the big things that I've learned through personally working with you is that there's so much you need to dig into beyond the details of just the term and the rate. Because sometimes I know you've taught me that a rate can look attractive, but the penalties are so deep in the event that you refinance or move that you ultimately would lose. So you have to do the net math at the end, and you're really great about doing that.
Well, thank you. I think, yeah, it's, you know, there's a couple of different sayings we have, but one of them is, you know, date the rate, marry the mortgage.
Right.
So, you know, the rate is one component, and don't get me wrong, it's a very important component. But it doesn't help you if you saved the equivalent of $1,000 on the interest rate up front, but paid an extra $6 because you didn't understand that some of the terms of the mortgage meant that you were going to pay extra at some point.
Right. Okay. Perfect. So let's talk about the pre-approval process, and that's quite the process. I will fully say that Karen and I are 100% endorsers of please get pre-approved before you start shopping for your first home or your next home, because there is nothing more heartbreaking than falling in love with a home and then going back only to find out that you can't afford it or it's not time for you yet, as well as when you think about the time and energy of yourself, potentially a seller, a seller's agent, and the buyer's agent. There's just a lot that goes into even just viewing homes. So if you're serious, please start the process with visiting a mortgage agent. That's literally step number one, I tell people all the time, is find out what you can afford, because that makes our search much more much more efficient and refined for you if we know even what your budget is. And I know that's a long and can seem tedious process because you ask for a lot of documentation, but I wanted to give you a big bunch of minutes to talk to people about what the pre-approval process looks like.
Absolutely. So I always start with the kind of unfunny joke in the mortgage industry, which is that we're going to ask you for everything but a blood and a stool sample.
Yeah.
And then I usually follow up with, but it's Canada, the land of regulation. So give us a year or two and we'll require a blood and stool sample at some point to get a mortgage.
Probably, yes.
So it is, to your point, it is an in-depth process. And not all pre-approvals are equal. I think this is important. If you've gone somewhere, whether that's a bank or online, and you've gotten a pre-approval in 90 seconds, that is not a pre-approval. What you've got is a rate hold. But no one has checked and pulled your credit. No one has looked at your documents. No one has actually calculated the numbers specifically applicable to you under the different rules and regulations that we have. So one example would be, and this is my personal experience, about 25% of the credit reports I pull have an error on them.
Okay, wow, that's scary.
It is. Mm-hmm. It's really surprising. And some of those errors are minor, right? It might be an old address that you lived at years ago. So that's not a big deal and it might not impede your mortgage. The lender might ask, hey, what's this address that's on there? That says it's your current address, but you haven't lived there in 10 years. But some of the errors are actually quite significant. Some are, I find student loans for some reason, even when they've been paid off, tend to linger.
Really?
Yes. So they'll, and usually it's a small balance. There'll be like $400 left on a student loan. And that doesn't seem like a lot. Is it going to impede you from getting mortgage? Well, the lender's going to say, hey, we noticed there's a little bit owing on your student loan, but there's no active payment. So can you go and get us a letter, a document that says either you don't owe any money to student loans or what is the payment that's applicable to that amount? Because by law, we have to include it in our numbers. And so that's time.
Right.
Right. That's time that somebody has to go log it online. It might have been 10 years since they had a student loan.
Right.
Log it online.
First, they have to find their user ID.
Yes. That's exactly it.
Reset your password.
So that's one of the things that if you went and placed an offer on a house, if you said, you know what, we're high income earners. We don't have any debt. We have excellent credit. I know we're going to be fine. I don't need a pre-approval. You go place your offer. We pull your credit. We see that. We say, hey, you're going to have to go get this just so we know what the payment is in order to get your approval. And that's just time they might not have in their offer. So that's one example of why we go through the diligence that we do. We want clients to go and place an offer with confidence. We want them to go out, see a house and go, not only do I love this house, I know that Karen has told me I can afford this house based on the metrics that I've given her and that we can qualify to purchase this house.
I want that as well.
Yes, absolutely you want that as well. I mean, every realtor, every lawyer, every person involved in the transaction should want that because nobody wants a client offering on a house that they can't ultimately get.
Oh, it is actually unfair to the seller because if you're not pre-approved and we're going to talk about what pre-approval really means and I'm going to talk about it forever, but if you're not pre-approved, then you've basically put the house on reserve, which is preventing the seller from showing it and potentially selling it to anybody else when you potentially knew you had no shot at this house, which is completely unfair to everybody involved in the transaction. Mm-hmm. And so think about yourself when you're a seller in the future, would you really want somebody doing that to you? So as realtors, we obviously do a lot of qualifying questions to make sure that even when we're receiving an offer on behalf of our sellers, that the other agent is confident this person's pre-approved. Hopefully they've seen their pre-approval letter and they're not just monkeying around and starting the pre-approval process to your point. It can be lengthy and most times those condition of financing days are 5 days, maximum 10, but you've got 2 weeks to get it done and sometimes you can't get it done.
Well, and it's a very, very good point. It's also to some extent unfair on the buyer themselves because I had a buyer last year who fell in love with this house, just fell in love with it. It was the house they wanted, their dream house. They'd have been down the road from them. They'd walked by or driven by. This was the house they wanted. They went to another institution, got pre-approved very quickly. They placed an offer and then there was something in their application. It wasn't a hard fix, but it just took a little time to fix. So they couldn't get qualified. So they had to give up. That house got bought by somebody else. And I helped them 6 months later with a purchase. And they weren't unhappy, but they were never as happy with this other place. They had this almost kind of a FOMO, like fear of missing out on the other place. And it was just a technicality. It was just a technicality that was easily fixed if they'd just gone and done the full sort of due diligence beforehand. So part of being pre-approved is we send a client a link to an online application, which takes, you know, 5 to 7 minutes to fill in, and it's name, date of birth, social insurance number, where they've lived at least the last 3 years, where they've worked at least the last 3 years.
Okay.
And then once they complete that application, it's going to ask them for a series of documents. And those documents center around three groups. The first group is identity. There's an onus on us, and I think on you as well.
Yes, there is.
To verify the identity of the person that we're working with.
Yep.
And in a world where we work, I mean, you work in a more personal fashion in the sense that you meet every client.
Yep.
I don't meet every client.
Right.
Locally, I try to meet as many as I can, but sometimes I'm dealing with people that aren't in Kingston. Sometimes I'm dealing with people who just can't make it to the office. So because I'm dealing with them remotely as well, we have to verify the identity. So we need two pieces of ID, you know, front and back side, like a driver's license, credit card, passport. Interestingly, a health card cannot be used in Ontario for ID.
That's interesting.
It is interesting, because in other provinces it can, and no one's ever properly explained to me why that is the case, but it is the case.
Okay.
The first bucket is ID. The second bucket is around employment, and it depends on the type of employment, but it usually involves an employment letter, pay stub, sometimes your T4s. If you're self-employed, it can involve tax returns and things like that. So it depends on the type of employment, what documents we're going to ask. But those, again, can take time to produce.
Right.
Right? Very rarely can you go to your employer and get an employment letter in 2 or 3 hours.
Right.
Right? So that's why getting pre-approved ahead of placing an offer, again, that just having that time to get those documents. And the last bucket centers around down payment. And again, the kind of unfunny joke in the industry is that the lender is essentially going to assume you're a money laundering drug mule.
Okay.
And we have to back them off that assumption, right, by proving where the funds for your down payment have come from.
Mm-hmm.
And so we have to show 90 days bank statements and all the transactions in that bank statement, not just deposits, but every transaction in that bank statement. If you moved money from one bank to another, or one bank account to another, we need both statements. And why 90 days, you might ask?
Right.
No clue.
Okay.
It's an arbitrary number that has been chosen by regulation and law that you have to prove for down payment. And so in that sense, that can be a bit more challenging, because very often we find clients have their down payment in 4, 5, 6. I think my record was 13 bank accounts.
Right.
13 different
some
accounts.
Some of mine, some of my partners.
Correct.
Some in a
TFSA, some in
a different savings account,
RRSP, that type of thing. So, so gathering all of those statements and those accounts and reviewing them.
Right.
Because we want to make sure that when the lender gets those statements, they're not going to say, I'm sorry, we can't accept this down payment because we can't prove where it came from.
Right.
You know, if you got I'll give a real example here. I had clients who got a significant amount of cash from getting married.
Okay.
They got cash, they deposited into their bank account. Now, it's hard to track cash. It was cash. They got cash on their wedding day and they put it in the bank. And this was within the last 90 days, so it mattered. So we had the clients go get their wedding registry proof, or their wedding license and their wedding registry proof, to prove that the day, you know, 2 days before
all this
they deposited.
Cash got deposited.
Yes.
2 days after the wedding.
Yes.
Wow.
And so we had to prove the timeline to the lender, because from the lender's point of view, they get fined incredibly heavily if they cannot show, when they get audited, if they cannot show that they did this due diligence on every single down payment.
Wow.
That they worked on. Yeah. And the fines are extreme.
Right.
I think TD got something like North America's largest ever money laundering fine. It was $1.6 billion, I think, dollars. Yeah.
Ouch.
So not specifically on one case of this. Yeah. They had a lot. But it's just the banks, it's something the banks are very, very, very conservative on in terms of how they document it.
Right.
So that's the three kind of components. It's the ID, the employment information, and the down payment information.
Can I ask us a question in here? Because I know this comes up frequently.
Yep.
A large percentage, and I won't quote a number today because I don't have my statistics available, but a large percentage of today's generation are getting their down payment together through an intergenerational gift or an early inheritance. And so imagine someone's parents or their grandparents decided they were going to give them $100,000 so that they can get a down payment and get into home ownership. But I know there's specific rules around gifts and gift letters and how long that money has been received and whether or not it's a loan or a gift. Can you talk a bit more about those? Because they're so common.
Absolutely. So the important thing is the technical rules say it has to be an immediate family member. So parent is okay, grandparent is okay, sibling is okay, even child is okay.
Okay.
But, you know, your cousin Bob.
Like not an uncle or something?
It's an exception.
Right.
We've done it, but you have to show there's a very close familial tie there.
How do you do that? I don't want to know.
You know, like, my uncle lived with us when I was a kid, you know.
He was like my second father or something.
He was like my closest uncle.
Some photos. I don't know how you would prove that, but
here's a photo album of it. Yeah. So the technical rules do say immediate family member. So if they're going to give you a gift, that's perfectly fine. They have to sign a gift letter, and that gift letter very clearly states, I am gifting, you know, I, Karen Mathey, am gifting Sherry Doherty $100,000 towards the purchase of this specific home.
Okay.
It is a gift. It is not repayable.
Okay.
And I provide my information, my name, date of birth, that information, and you provide your information.
Just for the record, y'all just heard that, right?
Yeah.
And there was a recording of that.
Yeah, I provide it. Yes, exactly.
There's going to be a sound bite of that.
It's a verbal
she
contract.
Said it.
Yeah. You're okay. Take it out of context. No. So I basically would sign this gift letter. You would sign this gift letter. And then the funds would have to be deposited into your account prior to purchasing. Now, the timing, to your point, the timing should ideally coincide with the letter. So ideally, you don't get the money like a year before and then purchase. It, again, we can work around that. It's an exception as long as we can show and define the transfer. If I can show that it came from my bank account, went to your bank account, we can tie it to that. But timing does matter. You also don't want to do it like 2 days before the purchase closes.
Right.
Because we want to show the lender that you have it and get that condition cleared. So it's really a function of getting that gift letter signed. Now, you said something very important. It's not a loan. And this is important because sometimes a parent will say, hey, I'll lend you the money.
Right.
And essentially, you can't do that. I mean, you can't do that.
It's now a debt for the young couple.
So I shouldn't say you can't do it. What I should say is we have to then use it in the ratios, in the numbers as a loan.
Right.
And we have to assign a payment for it, even if it's a zero interest.
Yeah.
We have to assign, the regulator forces us, any debt you have, there's a formula for what we have to use as a payment. And so very often what we find, I should not say you can't do it because you can do it. What we often find is that the person receiving the loan can't qualify. Like if it was $10,000 maybe, but if it's $100,000, they can't qualify with the payment that's assigned to that number.
Yeah.
So you can do it. It just makes it a lot more challenging. It also sits on under a different bucket of mortgage because now it's called a borrowed down payment mortgage.
Oh, interesting.
When you have your own mortgage, when you have your own down payment, I apologize. There's a specific sort of type of program that fits into. When you're borrowing your down payment, it's a bit of a tougher program to qualify for.
Interesting.
The steps are just a little harder.
Right. Very interesting. Okay, so my next thought is let's talk to people about how much of a down payment people should be trying to save and whether my understanding is that the best is to have 20% to stay away from some of the additional insurances you would have to have if you had less than 20%, but it can be done for as little as 5 with some other expenses, and it also depends on the kind of property. Now, that's as much as I know, because then I call Karen, and I say, please talk to my client in greater detail about what I just said. So yep. Over to Karen.
Excellent. So for your typical sort of residential property, you need a minimum. I usually say that the down payment Sherry's absolutely correct, is 5%. But I usually say you need 6.5%. And the reason I say you need 6.5% is because you need 5% for the down payment plus 1.5% on average for closing costs. Closing costs are when you buy a home, you're going to pay a lawyer. A lawyer is going to act on your behalf in the purchase of that home. And obviously there's a cost there. You may have a home inspection. There's going to be a cost there. And there's something called land transfer taxes
right.
in Ontario. So every time you buy a home in Ontario, the government likes to tax you in a multitude of ways. But the main way is land transfer taxes. As a first-time home buyer, you get a rebate. But that rebate sometimes doesn't cover the entirety of the land transfer taxes.
Right.
So you may have a portion to pay depending on the purchase price you're buying. And most purchases now have a portion to pay of that land transfer taxes. So I usually say to clients you want a minimum of 6.5%. But there's a couple of factors that can change that, including I talked about your typical residential property. If you're buying any type of property other than residential, that factor changes. If you're buying a rental property as opposed to a property you're going to live in, that factor changes. You need 20% in that case. And the other factor is if you're buying a home for more than $500,000, there's actually like a calculation of how much you need. It's 5% up to the first 500,000 and 10% thereafter.
Right. Okay. So, and most homes in our region are more than on average $500,000.
That is correct.
Single family detached home is north of six now.
Yep.
So unless you're into one of the more rural areas or potentially a condo,
yep,
you're definitely over five.
Yep. So for a $600,000 home, as an example, you need about $35,000 down payment. And then that 1.5% I said for closing costs.
Right.
Right. So, so the other thing, though, that I think is important is that concept of the 20% versus less than 20 versus 20%. When you buy a home with less than 20% in Canada, you have mortgage default insurance.
Okay.
This is insurance essentially that the lender is benefiting from that you're paying for.
Okay.
So you are going to, this is going to be added to your mortgage, and it can be, let's say, $10,000 to $20,000 added to your mortgage that you are paying for over time, but the benefit is really to the lender. If you stop paying your mortgage, the lender gets to go knock on, let's say, CMHC's door. CMHC right. is the insurance company, but they're also a Crown corporation.
Yeah.
Also fully owned by the government.
So the government's backing your mortgage.
That's exactly right.
Right.
So from the lender's perspective, I would argue, although they'd probably disagree with me if they heard this, they don't really have a lot of risk.
Okay.
Because you stop paying and they go knock on the government's door and get a check. It's not their problem anymore. Now it's the government's problem, or it's CMHC's problem, to try and get the money back. So because of that, when you put less than 20% down payment, those are low-risk mortgages from the lender's perspective. So they will price the rates very competitively. That's the most desired
odd.
Mortgage that they have.
So it seems a little contrary to me that if I have less of a down payment, I'm potentially, for this factor alone, we won't talk about all of them, but for this factor alone, going to get a lower mortgage rate. Rather than if I have a higher down payment, it's not government backed, and therefore on this factor alone, I might get a higher mortgage rate. That
Correct.
Seems very contrary.
It absolutely does. and it's probably one of the biggest like kind of confusions we have amongst clients is I'll get, you know, well, my neighbor just got, you know, this rate on this property. Did they put, were they a first time home buyer? Yeah, they were. So they probably put less than 20% down.
Right.
But remember that the client who puts the 5% down is paying 10, 15, 12, 18,000, whatever that premium is. They're paying more overall because they're paying that premium and getting the lower rate.
So is that becoming part of what gets financed with the mortgage, that additional 18,000?
Yes. It's okay. Added to the mortgage. Now, the piece that you have to pay up front, because remember I said we like to tax in a, our government likes to tax a number of ways.
Yes.
You do pay PST on that amount. So
okay.
Pay 8% of that amount at closing. Because even though it's a Crown corporation and that
yeah.
money is going to the government, they like to tax on their tax.
Right. That's just interesting because then you're basically paying interest for, say, 25 years on your insurance as well.
Yep.
Can you get out of that at renewal time?
They won't, essentially, no. They're not going to take it off. What
okay.
you can do if you want is you can do lump sum extra payments to pay that premium part off earlier.
Okay, so instead of getting yeah. applied to principal and interest, it
yeah.
gets applied to the insurance bucket.
Correct.
Okay.
Well, it applies to principal, of which part of the principal is that insurance bucket, right? They don't sit separately. But the other thing you can argue is that through a five-year term, let's say you start with a $450,000 mortgage. Through a five-year term, you're going to pay $30,000 of principal in those 5 years. If your premium was $18,000, you've already essentially paid it off
right.
in that first
okay,
5 years.
Okay, fair
right?
enough.
So you are paying it, you know, as you go. But that is why the rate can be lower for what we call an insured mortgage. An
right.
insured mortgage is just a lower risk mortgage for lender. Now, that said, there is an amount of down payment that sort of starts to get close to those lower rates. So once you have 35% or more down payment, your rate is pretty close to an insured mortgage. Because from
okay.
the lender's perspective, yes, there's still some risk,
mm-hmm.
but there's much more of a, they have much more of a buffer.
Well, say in that case, they're going to find a 65% of it.
Correct.
So once you're getting close to 50-50,
yep.
you're on the hook as much as the bank is.
Correct. Right.
That makes perfect sense.
Yeah. So the rates do start to equate at that point, but there is a difference between 20% down and 5% down from a rate perspective.
Okay, very interesting. And we touched on it, so I just wanted to talk about the fact that we often talk about amortization periods and terms.
Mm-hmm.
And those are different things.
Yes.
Can you explain those to our listeners, please?
So in Canada, we have the most common term, which is the length of the contract of the mortgage. So it's the time that you're tied in effectively to the rate. And so that tends to be 5 years, although more recently a three-year term has become popular as well. So let's say 3 and 5 year are currently the most popular terms. At that point, after the end of the 3-year or 5-year term, that's when your rate can reset. So if you're in a fixed rate, and let's say all those very, very lucky buyers who had like 2% for the last 5 years, they're now resetting at current rates.
Right, which we need to explore on another show.
Yes, we will explore that on another show. There's a lot there to unpack. That's correct. And then similarly with variable, you don't necessarily lock a rate because variable moves, but you do lock what's called a spread. So if the current variable rate across the banks is 4.45%, that's the prime rate, as we call it, your spread might be prime, which is that 4.45%, minus 0.45, so right. Your rate's 4. Mm-hmm. Prime minus 0.1, so your rate's 4.35. That spread can change at renewal.
Right.
So the bank can say, you know what, we don't like that you got this very generous spread. We're gonna make it worse for you, essentially, at renewal. And
right.
Try and buy. So very rarely do they make it better, I will point out, at renewal. That said, amortization is totally different. That's the number of years over which you repay your mortgage.
Okay.
Thankfully, we do not have to repay our mortgages in 5 years.
Right.
Because our payments would be
in the tens of thousands
per month, correct. Mm-hmm. So most mortgages amortize over 25 years. That's the kind of standard. Recently, about a year ago or so, they made a change that it used to be if you were buying with less than 20% down, you could not amortize more than 25 years. That was your cap.
Okay.
Which limited some people because the longer you can pay your mortgage over, the more you can qualify for because mm-hmm. your payment is lower. So they recently made a change that if you put less than 20% down payment, you can amortize over 30 years. That was never the case.
Right.
So we're finding that has opened up, like I have buyers where that in 1 month when that change was made, improved the amount they could buy by about 50 to 60,000.
Wow, okay.
That was a big change.
That's great.
Big change.
Absolutely.
There is a misconception that people think that it's only first-time buyers. It was designed for first-time buyers, but there's a few pockets that they'll allow it as well, which is if people are getting separated or divorced.
Okay.
Or if people haven't owned a home for 4 years.
Okay.
Right. So you can get that 30-year
It's kind of like a reset on first-time homeownership.
Correct, yes. That's exactly what it is. So
okay.
So that has made, in my opinion, a huge difference to people, allowing them to amortize over 30 years without needing a 20% down payment,
right.
Which used to be the case.
Right. Interesting. Okay. We are coming in for a landing, and we could just keep talking,
we will.
I will let everybody know Karen will be a regular reoccurring guest on our show, because as you can tell, she's brilliant, and this is just the tip of the iceberg of her knowledge. But maybe in 2-3 minutes, can you tell us what you're seeing for this year's mortgage market, what your thoughts and expectations are, and how people can navigate it, particularly if they're coming up on renewal, because we have so many people who bought in 2021, refinancing now on their 5-year term.
Yes. So I could do a whole half hour on the state of the market and or the types of mortgages that are offered.
Sure.
And what the pros and cons of each and how they work. But in the sort of couple of minutes that we have, I'll say that the Bank of Canada has been pretty clear. The Bank of Canada mandates how variable mortgages are priced, and they've been pretty clear that they're going to stay steady unless something dramatically shifts.
Okay.
So the Bank of Canada has one single mandate, which is inflation. They theoretically are paid to care about is inflation.
Yep.
They're not paid to care about GDP. They're not paid to care about housing. They're not paid to care about how the economy is doing. I mean, I'm not saying they don't care. They're just not paid to care.
Well, the way you describe it to me is one goal.
Yes, one goal.
One goal.
They have one goal, which is inflation. And so what they've said is inflation's actually not doing too bad right now. They're worried about cutting rates in an environment that would potentially push inflation up. And so they have said, and again, their messaging changes, but right now their messaging is we're okay with where inflation is, we're okay with where rates are right now.
Okay.
So there's not an immediate pressure for rates to come down.
Okay.
However, things can change. If the economy gets into a more dire circumstance, there's an argument whether or not we're in a technical recession right now, but if we start getting numbers out that unemployment is ratcheting up, that GDP is slamming down, that that inflation comes down even further, maybe because people stop buying things, people
right.
slow on the consumer side, then we could see some rate falls this year. There isn't currently an expectation of rate increases, not currently. So right now, I'd say if you're positioned in a renewal, get something locked in sooner rather than later to at least kind of hedge yourself.
Okay.
Because the way that most of us work, or most of our lenders work, and again, banks can be different, but all I'm talking about is mostly non-banks and a few banks, is if you lock a rate now for a renewal in, let's say, June, and rates drop, you get the lower rate.
Right. You were talking about following the rate, which is wonderful.
There's no downside to that. There is no downside. Because if rates go up, you're protected. But if rates go down, you get to drop that rate.
Okay.
And so there's, to me, there's no downside. Check with your lender, though, because some lenders, they only give you what's called exploding offers. Take this rate in the next 48 hours. If you don't take it, we're not holding it.
Okay.
So apologize in advance if that's your lender. But you cannot get a downside by moving early, talking to a mortgage broker or your person or your mortgage person early about your renewal to get yourself best positioned.
How early should you be talking to people? So if you're renewing, say, this fall, is it 6 months, three months?
I'd say preliminary call 6 months. We can lock something 4 months before at least. But preliminary call 6 months to get a guideline of what you're looking at, what you're trying to do. And then at least 4 months before is when we can lock a rate. We'll get prepared for that 4 month mark.
Okay. Well, I am so happy to have had you join us today. You are brilliant. You know, I tell people that all the time. Please look up Karen Matthey at the Mortgage Professionals if you'd like to have a one-on-one conversation with her. She is particularly brilliant. And everyone have a beautiful Monday.
Thank you.
Welcome to All the Fields on Island Radio 101.3 FM. You are here with Dee and
Anna.
How's it going?
Good. How are you?
I'm good.
Yeah.
I'm chilled, actually.
Chilled? Like, yeah. In a good way or a bad way?
I'm double chilled.
Oh.
Because I'm, like, anxiety chilled.
Uh-huh.
But I'm also, like, chilled isn't cold.
Well, half of that is good. I'll take half.
I think it's just the damp weather is getting to my old bones.
I know, right? It does seep in. Like, I'll take it over the minus 20, but, like, dang.
Yeah. It's like, when it's minus 20, it's so dry.
Yeah.
But then you're, like, cold in a different way.
It's true. The many facets of being cold.
But anxiety-wise, I am very chill.
That's nice.
Yeah.
I'm pretty chill, too. Like, every now and then, it'll hit me.
Right.
But overall,
I felt it my anxiety starting to bubble last night. Like, a little bit. It was, like, brink. It was like, hey, I'm still here. Don't forget about
What's
me.
What's up?
Don't forget about me.
Do you
me.
Think it was Game of Thrones?
No, it was before I started watching Game of Thrones. Game of Thrones soothed me.
I mean, sometimes high-intensity shows, like, help, and sometimes they hinder, I think.
Dude, when the Jays were, like, in the World Series, there was games, like, I literally couldn't watch because my anxiety was too bad.
I'm surprised. Did you watch the hockey game?
Like the Canada US yeah. women's game?
No, the men's today.
No.
Okay. I don't know. I feel like the collective anxiety was probably like right. high today.
Yeah. I was at the food bank when the women's game was on, and so like everyone was kind of like pulling out their phones and like checking the score and yep. like it was tied and like
it's yeah. a very similar game actually, because I was at my kids' gymnastics and like all the parents had their like phones out watching the game,
right?
And it was tied too, and then it was like sudden death overtime.
And who won?
U.S.
Oh
yeah
it would just be nice for Canada to like beat the U.S.
I know, right? I was talking to my husband about it because he's American, and he was like, you know, I think the percentage of Canadians that care is like so much more than the percentage of Americans that care about right. that game. So he's like, it would have been nice for Canadians to
yeah
to nab that, but
yeah, what can you do though, right?
know, <it's> sports.
Listen to us chatting about the sports instead of our feelings.
You didn't know that this was a sports radio.
Yeah. Welcome to all the sports on 101.3 FM.
That would be like the worst ever with our commentary. Oh, like, God. What sports do you like? Yeah.
I tried to understand football.
God.
But it just doesn't make any sense to me.
It doesn't make sense to me either. Also, it's just like they play for like 0.4 seconds and then it's like they're just, I don't know, walking around.
I know. And like what gets me too is like they play in the snow.
Yeah.
I'm like, dudes.
That would be uncomfortable.
Put on a jacket.
I see a bunch of like hilarious memes about rugby because it's like, it's so, how do I put this? Entertaining to watch the men on the men.
Right, right, right.
Because it's like very touchy-feely.
Yeah. I don't know much about men's rugby, but like I do know like the percentage of lesbians that play like women's rugby or then later on in life are lesbians. It's yep. like, oh, you played rugby. Oh, okay, yeah, it all makes sense now.
That's so
Is
funny.
That the same with men's? Is it like a thing or?
I don't know. That's a good question. I know it's definitely like enjoyed by people that enjoy men touching each other
right.
in intimate ways.
Got you.
But I don't know like if actual rugby players have any particular leanings.
It's kind of weird because I guess I haven't watched Heated Rivalry. I can't say that word.
You gotta watch it.
Yeah.
Heated Rivalry.
There we go. Have a hard time with that word. But like gay people in sports, like mm-hmm. percentage wise, it doesn't make sense. Like you can't have all these major league sports teams
oh, yeah.
and nobody's gay. Like nobody.
No, it's definitely closeted for sure.
You know?
100%.
Like it just doesn't make any sense.
Yeah. And it's just, it's so funny to me because I feel like, I've obviously never been a part of it, but like gym culture or like sports culture is so full of like male companionship and camaraderie, but then they have to like be homophobic in order to like offset it or something
because
right. there's all those like, you know, jokes and stuff in the locker rooms to like offset the fact that they're like changing in front of each other and slapping each other's asses.
It's like, that's crazy.
It is funny. But, you know, I hope that shows like this will open it up and make it more...
Make it okay,
yeah.
right? Because it's like, what does it matter?
Right?
It doesn't matter at all.
I know, like, the state of the world right now, like, that stuff matters the least.
Yeah.
In the entire universe.
Exactly.
You know?
let's get on to some music.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's a lot of shoegazy stuff from my side.
Yeah, it's a lot of stuff that I put on last week's playlist that didn't get played, so I'm kind of like, I don't know what it is. So again, it's a surprise.
Woohoo!
I'm know you thought I wasn't there, was alone under
Hey, it's All the Feels on Island Radio 101.3 FM.
I was like, are you doing it?
I love how we acknowledged that I was going to come in like 0.5 seconds ago and I already forgot.
Yeah, amazing. What you just heard was No Cameras by Victoryland, I Wasn't There by The Gins, and we started off our show with Wander by Blueberry.
Blueberry.
I liked those tracks.
Yeah, that Blueberry track is kind of, there's a little riff in there that just kind of, just
catches you.
Just gets me.
It was funny, I was playing 90s dance music to my kids last night. We're having a little glow stick party.
Nice.
And it's really funny to see, like, what catches them. Like, what hooks. Like, so Eiffel 65 Blue was, like, a big one. And Daft Punk caught them, but some of the other stuff that got really big, they were like, this isn't catchy at all.
Did you play the Mr. Vane?
Yeah, I did, and she was like, no, I want Blue again.
Oh, so disappointing.
I know, it was funny.
While we weren't on the mics, we were talking about AI music, though.
Yeah.
And it's pretty scary.
It is scary. I think you brought up something that I just hadn't really thought much about, because I've heard of AI music in terms of, like, Spotify and these companies basically using AI, or, like, paying some producer that uses AI to create, like, a shit ton of music that just feeds the money back to them. But I had never thought about, like, artists using AI to better their music, like, quote unquote, better their music.
Yeah. And, like, I guess it's no different than, like, pitch correctors, right?
Right.
In a sense, right? But, like, still now it's like you can literally just, like, type in commands.
Right.
And have it done, like, without any real knowledge.
Yeah, like the natural language processing, kind of like the, like, I want it to do this, and then it just does it.
Yeah. Like, you don't even really need to know much about music at all. Like, you're just like, I want a calypso beat behind this.
Yeah.
And, like, all of a sudden there's, like, some sort of calypso beat. You know what I mean? Like,
and, yeah, the thing that I would love to know is, like, where those samples are coming from. Because, like, are they scraping small artists and taking style and taking sound from us the same way that, like, visual artists have been screwed over?
I think before the lawsuits, like, Sony, Warner, and Universal were, like, in lawsuits or whatever. And I think, like, anything before that was all scraped.
Right.
And, like, now when you try to put, like, a copyrighted, like, song into, like, an AI generator, like, to make it your own,
right,
it says it's copyrighted. But if you're, like, on a smaller artist, not on a label, like, you're open to have that stolen.
That's interesting, too, because, like, even if you, like, can't put in a song to, like, rip off that way, like, even when you put in a prompt, like, hey, I want this calypso beat, like, they're gonna have to, like, pull what a calypso beat is from their library, which is scraped material, I'm assuming.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So it's actually pretty crazy, and it's, like, now, like, record, like, contracts, like, actually say, like, you know, like, your songs can be used in, like, all these different ways. Like,
whoa.
So it's like, you're really, like, if you're signing with a major label, like, you're really giving all your rights away.
Yeah.
It's pretty scary.
That is. Because, like, I feel like you might be able to tell an AI song. Like, there's all the, like, spoofy AI song accounts on Instagram. I don't know if you've seen any of them. They're, like, called, like, Beats by AI and some of these. And they're just, like, really stupid songs. Like, usually they're, like, sexual in nature. Like, my dad wants my titties or something, like, so gross.
Okay, yeah, like, these country
fake songs that are sometimes funny. But, like, it's that, like, subtler use of AI. You know, where you can't tell.
That's the thing. Like, that's, like, I think there's an artist that we're gonna play today that I just suspect that it's too perfect.
Right.
Like, it's just everything is too perfect, which to me takes away the actual, like, grit of a band.
Yeah.
You know, where there is those, like, little mistakes or, like, little I don't know, little hits of feedback or something like,
totally.
You know, the notes half played or something, but it kind of works and it gives it character.
Exactly. Like the inconsistent speed sometimes feels good, you know?
Yeah.
Like it doesn't, because you can like put a bass or something like that into a DAW, like a music recording program, and you can quantize the notes and have it like have the downbeats set exactly on a regimented thing.
Right.
But that doesn't always feel good. It's like, I think it relates to like my work too, because I'm a product designer by trade, and there's some instances, especially when you're like aligning, say, a logo within a circle, where like actual center doesn't look good.
Right.
Like it's, you need optic center, which is like usually a bit lower where it feels, because like just depending on the shape that you're putting in there, like it may feel like heavier on the bottom.
Yeah.
And so then you have to pull it, you know what I mean? That kind of thing.
I even noticed that in like Photoshop or whatever, and like you've selected all your layers and you go to like center it and it's like, that just doesn't look right.
Right.
But like mathematically it's right, but just your eye doesn't.
Exactly. So right. I think the same thing with ears, you know, like,
right.
Sure, maybe it's perfectly on beat, but it doesn't sound as good.
Yeah. Yeah.
So maybe there'll be some backlash. I could see, like, with the onset of AI, I was talking about this recently, actually, like, was that I bet there'll be some kind of backlash, like return to craft type.
Right.
Like response to all of it.
Well, that's the thing. I mean, it's like our band, we play in a band called 47 Teeth, if you haven't listened to the show before, but like we actually just press vinyl.
Yeah.
So it's like having something like tangible you can hold in your hands that's like real, you know?
So cool.
I think I'd like to think the world is going to go back to that, but I think that like AI will just bulldoze everything.
I know, right? Well, because you're never going to know. Like there's not going to be a way to tell.
Yeah.
That's the freaky part.
I know.
But maybe like our ears will just reject it. Like
right.
It just won't sound good.
Yeah, yeah. But like what gets me is that like major labels are now signing AI artists.
And that's, it's just like really screwed. How can you like sign an AI? Like is it a person that's like using AI? Like
so
is that what
like,
they're signing?
Timberland is behind like one of them or
okay.
whatever. But I don't know if that's the girl that got signed. But like these mega deals, but it's just money funneling back in to the record label. Like
yeah, it seems like money laundering almost.
I think it is money laundering, like right out in the open.
Right?
You know?
Nothing's off the table these days. People are just like committing crimes with no recourse. So
yeah. So what does it matter, right? What does it matter?
Oh God. That's funny.
Whew. Should we listen to some music?
Let's do it.
Okay.
This is the beginning.
Hear it the same time.
Fire. There's how many miles?